Madam Chair,
yes,
sure.
Thank you. Okay. Good morning and welcome to the last meeting of the year of the Federal Election Commission for Thursday, December 13th, 2018. Madam Vice Chair, is there a motion for the correction and approval of the minutes?
There is, Madam Chair. I move approval of the minutes for the meeting of Thursday, December 6th, 2018, as set forth in agenda document number 18-52-A.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The motion passes unanimously. Thank you. The next matter on the agenda is Draft Advisory Opinion 2018-15, requested by Senator Ron Wyden. There are two drafts on the agenda, and my understanding is that there's support for Draft B.
We have some late submitted documents, Madam Chair.
Yes, please.
I move to suspend the rules on the timely submission of agenda documents in order that the Commission may consider the late submission of agenda documents number 18-46B, 18-53A, 18-54A, 18-55A, and 18-56A. I didn't realize we had that many items on the agenda.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. The motion passes unanimously. So there are two agenda documents on the record today, and my understanding is that there's support for Draft B. Are there any comments or questions?
I think we've got unanimous support, so perhaps we should just move to adopt. I hereby move to adopt Draft B.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. That motion passes unanimously as well. Thank you very much. The next matter on the agenda, Draft Advisory Opinion 2018-12, Defending Digital Campaigns, has been held over once again to a future meeting. The requester has asked for more time to respond to the drafts that were placed on the public record prior to the last public meeting. So I assume they've given us an extension of time, and I assume we will take that up in January. Similarly, the next matter on the agenda, Draft Advisory Opinion 2018-13, Osaya Network, LLC, has also been held over to another meeting. The requester also gave us an extension of time in order for us to consider some comments that they recently filed regarding this advisory opinion request. So that one will also likely be discussed in January. The next matter on the agenda is Regulation 2014-2, Draft Final Rule and Explanation and Justification for Reporting Multi-State Independent Expenditures and Electioneering Communications. Mr. Knopp, are you on top for that?
Yes, I am.
Okay, and also, Ms. Ciccone, if you would please join us just in case we have any questions or comments. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair Hunter, and good morning, Commissioners.
Good morning.
Agenda document 1855A is a,
Oh, okay. Good morning, Commissioners. Agenda document 1855A is a draft final rule concerning how and when to report independent expenditures that are made in connection with the presidential primary election, but that do not reference or target a specific state's primary. The draft final rule adopts alternative B from the notice of proposed rules, and it requires that those making multi-state independent expenditures in six or more states that do not refer to any particular state base its reporting on the first of those states holding a presidential primary. The draft also provides guidance to those making independent expenditures in less than six states regarding how to report those expenditures. If approved, the draft final rule would take effect 30 days after publication in the Federal Register. I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. And thank you to OGC, to Ms. Ciccone and her staff, and to all of the commissioners. This has been something that we've been talking about for quite a long period of time. It's a reporting issue that's dogged us to try to figure out what the best way to do this is. And I think we've come up with something that hopefully will work much better for the public than our last attempt. Ms. Ciccone, would you like to add anything?
Yeah, just briefly, I'd like to thank the Commission for reaching an agreement on this rulemaking. We've heard from numerous filers over the years, over many, many years. I was looking back at emails, like back to the beginning, like 2010. So it's been a while, who've expressed frustration about the inaccuracy of the reports that they're filing under the method that's outlined in AO the AO, Western Reps AO 2011-28, where that one required filers to divide the amount of the nationwide IE by the number of states with remaining primaries. This rule will provide filers with clear guidance, a clear definition of what a multi-state nationwide IE is, as well as specific guidance on how to disclose it. So we're very happy about this, and I want to thank the Commission again for making this a priority.
Thank you again, Ms. Chacona, for your help in coming up with a good way to address this. I'd also like to thank Jack Walther, who was an intern in my office last summer. I wish he could be here with us today for the vote, but we'll call him afterward, assuming that it passes, and let him know that his good work is paying off today. So thanks to him as well. Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, this has been an issue that has been bedeviling us for a long time. We thought we came up with the right answer with the Western Rep Pack AO. It was a unanimous decision, and everybody hated it. I don't know that there's a perfect answer, but I am hopeful that this is a better answer, a clearer answer. Excuse me. And I also want to give credit where credit is due. I want to applaud the chair for her leadership on this issue. She was determined to get this done this year, and it is obviously a lot of staff worked very hard, and I want to thank them as well, but I don't think we would be here voting on this document today if not for the chair's persistence and determination to get this done. So thank you for that, Madam Chair.
Thank you. All righty, is there a motion? Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you. I move approval of the draft final rule and explanation and justification for reporting multi-state independent expenditures and electioneering communications, Reg 2014-02, as set forth in agenda document number 18-55A, and direct the staff to work with the Federal Register to get it published and get it over to Congress and do what we need to do to really put it into effect in time for the next cycle.
Great, thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
The motion passes unanimously. Thank you. The next matter on the agenda is draft legislative recommendations for 2018. Mr. Pugh from the Office of Congressional Legislative and Intergovernmental Affairs will be joining us. Thank you, Mr. Pugh, for putting this list together for us, and it's one that we're able to garner four votes for because we've got a lot of different people's ideas in here. And would you like to discuss the recommendation?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The draft legislative recommendations for 2018 before the Commission today are the 12 recommendations included in the agenda document. One you'll notice is new. It's prohibit aiding or abetting the making of contributions in the name of another. And this came from a suggestion from the Litigation Division of the Office of General Counsel. One very familiar legislative recommendation is missing. That's for Senate electronic filing, and mm-hmm. we don't need to make that recommendation anymore because that has been accomplished and enacted.
You think that happened because of our recommendation?
I'm sure that it did.
Our many recommendations.
That's true.
I'm sure that played an important part, actually. And we also have other progress to report. Last night, the Senate passed H.R. 7120, which would extend the administrative fine program from its current expiration through the year-end reports for 2023. So in the past, when that bill had already passed the House, so it's headed to the President for signature, in the past, when Congress had just recently extended the administrative fine program, the Commission has not pursued a recommendation to make the program permanent in the year after that. Not that the Commission is distancing itself from the program, but just felt like because Congress had just acted on a very similar request and given us at least partial relief, the Commission chose to just sort of let that one rest for a year or two. So I did want, and if the text before you was written before the Senate acted last night. So if we go with the text, we'd need to update it to show that it had passed the Senate. So I did want to flag that issue and see where the commissioners are on it.
Okay. Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So would your recommendation be to excise this from the list of recommendations for this year since there was Senate action, and then, if necessary, include this in future legislative recommendations as it gets closer to expiration?
Exactly, yes. Okay. That's what the Commission's done in the past, and I think that's the best course.
Okay.
Perhaps at the time of making a motion, we can include that in the motion, Commissioner Peterson. Thank you. Any other comments, Madam Vice Chair?
Thank you. So I guess we'll have 11 after. Which is the which number are we going to cross out?
Number 7.
Number 7. Okay. So that still leaves us with 11 solid recommendations. Some of them are not very exciting, updating citations to reflect the recodification of FECA, but it would be useful. I want to put in a special plug for authority to create SES positions at the FEC. This is something that, again, it would be really important and helpful to us internally to have that authority to retain, attract and retain good people at the FEC, as many other agencies have that SES authority. I know that's not one that, you know, sounds very sexy or exciting for folks outside the building, but inside the building, that would really make a difference to us. And then we have some what I think are really important recommendations on preventing fraud and personal use of campaign funds. There's a lot of money going into campaign accounts these days, and obviously a lot of money going into super PACs in particular. And we have seen an uptick in embezzlement, fraud, over the years, and there is a recurrent problem of personal use, and we have a good law on the books that prevents personal use of principal campaign funds, but we do not have complete agreement on what that means about leadership PAC. I think the current law can be read to include a personal use prohibition on leadership PACs. That is not a universally held view. But even I can't come up with an argument under the current law for preventing personal use of super PAC funds. And there really is no good reason not to have that on the books. I think it would be a great protection for the folks who give money to those entities to know that it's going to be used for the political purposes that it's intended. So I hope that this has been a good year for us, and we've gotten a couple of our longstanding recommendations have been adopted. So I'm hopeful that maybe next year we can see some similar progress on some other important areas.
Thank you. Any other comments? Is there a motion? Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you. I move approval of the congressional the draft legislative recommendations for 2018 as set forth in Agenda Document 18-54A, with the exception of Recommendation 7, which should be deleted and tabled for a later recommendation.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. The motion passes unanimously. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Pugh. If you could stay up here again, please, for the next matter on the agenda, which is fiscal year 2020 budget amendment request. And there's a document that accompanies this. I believe the Vice Chair, this was part of your motion.
Yeah,
it was part of the motion earlier to make it, it's a late submitted document and it's public by now. It's a memo from me to the Commission with an attached letter to Mr. Mick Mulvaney, the Director of OMB. Letting OMB know that since the electronic filing bill was passed, as we just discussed in the previous conversation, that was part of our budget submission for the 2012 fiscal year. After our submission, Congress passed the electronic filing issue, and therefore we have freed up some money that we didn't otherwise know about. Our estimation is approximately $600,000. So because we now don't need that money for the process of the paper filing that many of the senators did in the past, they're now required to file their reports electronically. We know we're saving $600,000 from our budget request. And OMB initially asked the agency to submit a request that was 5% less than the previous year's budget. We did that, but then we asked for what we call an add back, and we had various add backs that were requested by different parts of the agency, including some for cybersecurity from Mr. Palmer and other issues that, that people anticipated needing in a presidential election year. And so we accounted for all of that, and the final number that we sent was only a 1% decrease. Many of the agencies across the government did not get that increase beyond the 5%. So they're going to be dealing with a 5% cut from the previous year. So as a part of that, the $600,000, it turns out to be approximately 3 to 5%, depending on how you calculate the money, of the discretionary part of our budget. If you take away personnel costs and rent and those sort of fixed costs, this amount is 3 to 5% of that pot. So it's not a huge amount, but it's also, in my view, not insignificant and something that I believe we should let the Office of Management and Budget know about. One of my colleagues suggested that I could send the letter on my own. I potentially could be able to do that legally, but I don't think that would be appropriate. I think the budget process is something that the commission has voted on. We voted on the budget submission that we sent to OMB a few months ago, and so I think a letter notifying OMB of a request for a reduction or an increase or whatever it may be should have the support of the commission. And so I'm not willing to send that letter on my own. So I put it on the agenda because budget issues are an open meeting. There's no exemption for talking about this in executive session. So I put it on the open meeting to discuss, and I'd like to have a vote on it. My understanding is it may not pass, but it was important to me to notify the government of a savings that we did not know about at the time we submitted our budget. Mr. Pugh, do you have anything else to add? No? Okay. Any other comments, questions? Madam Vice Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, well, thanks to Congress, we are all very grateful that they have passed electronic filing, and there will be savings as a result of that. And then the question is, so what should we do with the savings? The chair has suggested that we should ask that the budget be reduced. I believe we should use those funds for the benefit of the agency and the public and in service of the important mission of our agency, and I particularly think that we ought to use it in support of beefing up our enforcement division. It's been a longstanding concern, I know, of all the commissioners that cases take too long from the time they come in the door until the time we are able to resolve them. And I think there are a variety of reasons for that. We have to own some of that up here at the on the 12th floor. Still getting used to saying the 12th floor instead of the 9th floor in the new building. I think commissioners take too long to make decisions on cases, and that has ripple effects on not only it obviously delays it for that period of time, but I also think it sends a message to the staff that we don't care about timeliness. So I think that is a problem, but I also think there's only so much you can expect people to do at the staff level, and our numbers in the enforcement division have been declining over the years, and yet our caseload keeps increasing. And I prepared a simple graphic on this, and we'll see whether our brand new spiffy, seems to come with a noise, but we've got the statistics. And I mean, this is just really simple. In 2010, we had 59 full-time equivalents. You know, that's the government techno term for staff positions in our enforcement division, and now we've got 41. And in 2010, we had 100 cases that those 59 people were working on, and now we've got 329. It's over tripled the caseload. Not all of them are complicated, but some of them are very complicated. So, and in addition to that, what that doesn't even capture is that there are, I think, half a dozen OGC attorneys who are on long-term loan to commissioners' offices. And I think that's actually a great thing for the staff to be able to have the experience of working in commission offices and see how the place works from this perspective. I think everyone who's done it has really enjoyed that experience and found it highly educational and helped them do their job better. But that's six fewer lawyers who are downstairs doing the work of the agency. So the numbers are even a little bit misrepresentative. And I think we should, I have suggested in the past that maybe we could let them, OGC, fill those positions on a two-for-one basis if we're not willing to let them fill all six positions that we have actually, we're using upstairs. Maybe we could let them fill three of those slots. But in any event, the money that we would save on electronic filing, on not having to process the paper reports, would not even cover the costs of replacing those six attorneys, and certainly wouldn't cover the cost of going from 41 to 59 people, but it would be a start. It would be a good place to start. So that is why I was unable to support the chair's request that we ask for a budget reduction, because I think we could use that money in a productive way that would benefit the American people and serve the mission of our agency.
Thank you. As noted earlier, there is a process whereby the commission submits a budget request, and the process requires a vote of the commission to send the document over. And if somebody wanted this information to be included in that document, that was the appropriate time to do so. My guess is that may not have garnered four votes, and so doing it this way is sort of, in my mind, an end run around the process, because you're now saying, well, if we have this money left over, we'll just use it in a way that you know, a portion of the commission wants to do, and that's not the way that it works. If every government agency was able to do that, there'd be a lot of money that was appropriated by Congress, and Congress wouldn't know the reason. They rely on the documents that are drafted by agencies, and, you know, it's a wish list. It's telling them, it's telling OMB and Congress what we need, and this information was not in there, and so it's a little late now. Another point I'd like to make, which I was going to bring up earlier in a different context, but part of what we've done this year is we've done a few things to reduce the number of cases that end up in the enforcement docket. One of them is the multi-state IE rulemaking that we just passed. There's a lot of cases that ended up in that docket where people had an RFAI that ended up getting referred to OGC because they weren't reporting it properly under some people's view of the law. Now that we have a rule on that, I anticipate those cases won't end up in the enforcement docket. So there's some. There's also some that we moved from the Office of General Counsel to ADR for sort of low dollar amounts that don't deal with complicated legal issues. That's another chunk of cases that will be removed from the enforcement docket. There's also a program that we started recently that I think is an excellent addition to the agency that allows committees who are having a problem complying with the incredibly complex law to avail themselves of what we sort of call colloquially the FEC campaign school, run by Ms. Ciccone, Greg Scott, and others, Ms. Orak, and Alec Palmer, and others in the agency, where they have an opportunity to learn about the law so that they don't mess up again. And that will also reduce the number of enforcement cases in our docket, because I think the enforcement lawyers should spend their time doing cases that are weighty legal decisions, and they should do it more quickly. And I agree with you that we bear some responsibility for some of the delays as well. But those are my ideas on how to reduce the docket on the enforcement cases. And again, you know, saying now we want to talk about other ways to spend it just isn't the way that the government process is run. Thank you. Any other comments? Commissioner Walther.
I have some. First of all, I think there's some sense in calling out the fact that we do have, in theory, a $600,000 remaining amount of money. My concern is this. We know when we adopt our budget, and I'm not a fan of this procedure, but that we have in our budget usually a number of people, a number of places which are not necessarily filled at the time, but which, based upon our budget, will fill them. But since I've been here, we've never done that. We've never actually filled up the vacancies that we say we have when we apply for our budget. So usually there's been between $500,000, sometimes $2 million of money at the very end. And where it goes is really a kind of amorphous a process. And I don't think that's good budget either. And I think we ought to, if you want to, you know, tighten up and about where the money's going to go and where it's not going to go, we ought to say, well, we know that we're not going to spend this kind of money because we don't hire like we should. So we ought to have a 5%, you know, reduction in what we want to ask for in that area, or maybe 10%, so that we're really not, which, I mean, I like having the extra money, but I don't think it's the best way to get it unless we tighten up our own procedures. So I'm... This may be a one-off, but I think the approach is concerning to me, because we have a something mid-year that's going to save money, and we just don't automatically write, and we've not done it before, so I have mixed views about that. I see two draft letters, and I see one that was done, I guess, by Commissioner Peterson this morning, and I'd be interested in looking at that and maybe talking about it later on. You know, I do think we, even if the chair were able to accomplish all these changes, which they basically eliminate work from our enforcement system and put it into kind of a non-enforcement system, and some of that sounds great, but if you look at the numbers going from 41 to 329, that's so dramatic that none of those improvements would make that much difference at all. But what we do see it is we see that our caseload has grown, and the amount of time it takes to move those through the system has been, I think, way too long. I will be glad to say that a good part of our delay is the commissioners. We take too long. We sometimes, you know, don't really want to get to a case or find reasons not to move it along, and I think we could do more to improve. On the other hand, we just don't sometimes have enough people, I think, to get the work done and put it through the system. And I know I've asked every time we have a discussion on this, do we need more help? And I'm told internally, no. But my view is we must be some reason why we can't seem to move these cases faster, even if we were being diligent, which is a big if also in a number of respects. So I just wanted to have this as an opportunity to speak out a little bit on the issue. I'm not opposed to maybe giving some notice of the fact that this has happened, but I'm not sure I want to suggest that we couldn't find a good place for it, and maybe we could modify that letter and say we're still looking to see if there's areas where we might find it to be something that we could justify in terms of retaining it for a period. We haven't had a chance to discuss this yet, in a collective way. So those are just some thoughts that are out there for consideration.
Thank you, Commissioner Walther. I think at this time, I think it might be prudent to vote on the letter that I submitted, and then in January, if you'd like to make some edits to the version that Commissioner Peterson sent around, I'd be happy to consider them at that time. Commissioner Peterson, Madam Vice Chair,
just. One short comment on what my colleague was just saying. If we don't spend all the money in our budget, it reverts to the Treasury. When we have had large salary lapses in the last couple of years, part of that is not our fault. There are some positions that we are not in a position to fill. There are some empty chairs at the table, and those empty chairs come with their own staff, and that's, it's not an insignificant amount of money that we have to keep sitting in our budget in hopes that we will get new colleagues and the commission will once again be fully staffed. But some of that salary lapse is out of our control. We have what I consider to be a rather odd practice where anytime somebody leaves, takes a new job, there's a requirement that commissioners actually approve every single backfill. That the, if it's a GS-5 secretary or if it's a head of a division, it still requires sign-off from the personnel committee, which is commissioners. And I think as a management matter, we would do better to allow our managers to make those kinds of decisions on which positions need to be backfilled. But that is also part of the reason why we end up with additional FTEs that don't get filled.
Thank you. And I'm glad you brought up that sometimes money is sent back to the U.S. Treasury when we don't need the funds, and I think that's a good thing. And I'm happy when we're able to send it back and not just use the money for something that we may not need. With respect to commissioners approving personnel hires, I think it's a great idea, and it's because it's a budget. It has major budget implications when you hire somebody in the federal government. For the most part, after the first year, you know, people have an ability to stay, and it has a significant budget implication. And so it's something I think we should take seriously. And there are times when the agency, you know, changes because of changes in the law or because of changes in practice, and we might want to move resources from one part of the agency to another. And that gives commissioners an opportunity to take a look at those issues. So I think getting approval from commissioners is a really sound policy. Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will move in the letter, even though I don't think we've got the support yet. Maybe we'll work on it again early next year. But I move approval of the letter set forth in agenda document number 18-56-A.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed?
No.
No, with the qualification that I'll work with you on a letter next year.
Thank you, Steve.
In January.
Appreciate it. For now, the motion fails by a vote of 2-2. Commissioner Peterson and I voting in favor. The Vice Chair and Commissioner Walther voting against. Thank you. The next matter on the agenda I don't think is controversial. It's the meeting dates for the first half of 2019. Madam Vice Chair, do you have any comments on the meeting dates?
Just that I'm looking forward to the meetings.
All righty. Is there a motion?
There is. I move approval of the setting of meeting dates for the first half of 2019 as set forth in agenda document 18-53-A.
Thank you. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Motion passes unanimously. Thank you. In advance of the election of the officers, I'm going to read off a list of people who have provided many years of service here to the agency. 40 years of service, 35 years of service, and 30 years of service. It's an amazing accomplishment, and we appreciate it very much. And then I'll have a few short remarks, and then we'll move on to the election of officers. I would like to show you the award certificate that we're going to be handing out after the meeting to all of the people that I'm going to read. It's a nice certificate with the seal. And what's that called when it's raised?
Embossed.
Embossed. Very nice. So thank you very much to everybody that I will read the recipients of the Years of Service Award. For over 40 years of service, Teresa Mallory, Robin Kelly, Ida Rivas, Marty Faven, Jim Allen, Jackie Crawford, Cynthia Myers, Garland Coleman, Carol Worthy. Thank you very much to all of you. 40 years, that's quite an accomplishment. Steve, hasn't the agency been here for 40 years? I think now it's 43 or something like that. Yeah, we should write a report on that. And the next Years of Services Award is for people who have served here for 35 years. Jim Jones, Pat Dunn, Cheryl Williams, Mary Moss, Judy Fox, Michael Pearson, Wanda O'Neill, and Robert Bonham. Thank you very much to all of you for 35 years of service. And the last list for today is over 30 years of service. Kevin Sally, Candace Sally, that's cute. Donna Smith, Kimberly Hart, Sam Stewart, Michael Moody, Gwendolyn Holmes, Tony Buckley, Marie Dixon, Larry Calvert, Stephanie Watson, Donnie Harris, Patrick Donahue, Dorothy Yeager, Vernon Shorter, Gilbert Ford, Sylvia Windham, and Dominique Dillensiger. Thank you very much to all of you. We appreciate it. And this is my last meeting as chair of the FEC on my second tour of duty as chair, and I enjoyed it very much. I enjoyed working with all of the staff and my fellow colleagues. I'm looking forward to passing the gavel along to Ellen, and I know she'll do a great job. Just wanted to make a few short comments. As frequently happens in the area of campaign finance law, the law is being challenged again through a variety of different lawsuits in two key areas. One area is with regard to donor disclosure, and we had a decision over the summer about that, and the agency put out some guidance in October to help the public know how to comply for now on that issue. Another one is the question of how political committee status is determined. There's litigation on that issue throughout the country, just showing that in those two areas of the law, even though they've been a fixture of the law since the very beginning, there's still a large amount of uncertainty. And so hopefully one of these days we'll be able to have some clear guidance on both of those areas, and we look forward to getting future decisions in that regard. There are a lot of other issues that are in the news, you know, over the past year on campaign finance, on campaign finance law. And when I go out and speak to groups, I get a lot of questions about, you know, news of the day as it relates to our jurisdiction. And as you know, there's a lot of things that we're not able to talk about because of the confidentiality provisions of that attach the enforcement process. But it's definitely something that I, for one, look forward to talking to at the appropriate time once those provisions are no longer attached to the issues. With regard to enforcement this year, we've had a modest increase in the number of enforcement cases that we closed this year. We worked hard to try to whittle down the docket, and all of my colleagues joined in that effort. We were reasonably successful, as I said, in increasing the number of cases closed this year. We have moved, as I referred to earlier, a lot of cases to ADR, where many of us believe that that's an appropriate place to deal with certain cases that are here at the agency. And thank you to Krista Roche, who's here today. She's now the permanent ADR director, and she's done an excellent job. We've also started educational programs to encourage voluntary compliance, and that is part of our statutory mandate to help encourage voluntary compliance. Thank you to Alec Palmer, Pat Orrick, Debbie Ciccone, and Greg Scott for all of your efforts and all of the people that work with you. I think that's an excellent program, and I think it will help people comply with the law. We've talked about electronic filing for Senate filers. In that regard, that's a really good story for every part of the agency participated in that transition from OGC to computer services, IT. It's called IT here. At the RNC, we call it computer services. The IT division and a lot of everybody else really helped out a lot. And in the transition, I heard from a lot of people in the public saying that the FEC was ready, willing, and able to answer any and all questions. And the filings all came in very quickly after the law was changed. And it was a very successful transition. So thank you to the whole agency on that. With regard to rulemakings, we finally accomplished the multi-state IE rulemaking. It's a small one, but hopefully it'll help those people who are exercising their constitutional right to run independent expenditures in the upcoming presidential election. And we also started the internet disclaimer rulemaking. We had a two-day hearing over the summer. We had a lot of very useful comments and discussions among commissioners. I think one of the issues, at least speaking for myself, is I'm still examining, you know, the underlying reason for whether or not to do this rulemaking and how to go forward, thinking about whether or not it's the kind of rulemaking that is necessary. Our law requires that we only do a rulemaking if it's necessary to, you know, for the public to inform them on something that there's been an issue on. And, you know, one of the pillars that many of the comments used was the foreign interference. As it turns out, you know, there really weren't very many ads that were run by Russians. I think the estimate now is approximately $100,000 of ads paid for by groups affiliated with the Russian government. And we know that the NRSC spent, I believe it was $2.3 million running internet ads for a relatively small Senate race in the last cycle. So $100,000 is not a lot of money, and we're not even sure out of that $100,000 of ads spent how many of them would have even required a disclaimer under our current rules. The other issue that's come up multiple times is some of the comments have noted that some people aren't even following the rules as they exist now, and I'm still sort of poring through some of the documents to find evidence of that, and I'll be sending a letter today to one of the professors that sent in comments I think her studies are very important because she testified here. It's Professor Kim from the University of Wisconsin. She testified here over the summer, and she did provide follow-up comments, which were helpful. But many other commenters and even United States senators are relying on her study. So I have follow-up questions for her, so I want to make sure that I fully understand the basis of her study and her conclusions. With respect to the Federal Employee Viewpoint Survey, that's a survey that's done throughout the federal government. We made a modest improvement in the morale of the agency this year, and we even got an award for it, if you can believe that. Thank you, Mr. Palmer, for accepting that award on the agency's behalf yesterday. I think we got a plaque. Do we have the plaque? Thank you, Eric. I just wanted to show you the plaque that Alec received yesterday. Right, Alec, is this the one? Or did you make this? Okay. He didn't make it. He really got it yesterday. The best places to work. Congratulations to the FEC for the most improved small federal agency. And we think that a lot of that is because, because of in the move to the new building led by the capable India and her staff, many others who we've recognized earlier in the year. They made sure that the staff was involved in a lot of the decisions. You know, not everybody got exactly what they wanted, but they were able to weigh in on what they wanted with respect to the new building. And thank you to everybody who made the move so successful. Also because of our excellent managers who have really stepped up and made a strong effort to engage the staff and listen to their comments and concerns. So we appreciate all of the managers in the agency for doing that. So thank you to all of you. I want to thank in particular my staff, Eric Brown, who's back here, Eric, yay. Amy Rothstein, who's sitting in the way back. She always hides back there. Chris Curran, where's Chris? Here. And Katie Reynolds, who's right behind me, and Lindsay Melody, who left earlier in the year, for all of your support and help this year, putting together the agendas and helping me run the meetings. I really appreciate it. Thanks to all of my fellow commissioners and their EAs for all of your help throughout the year, and to all the staff. Thank you very much. And with that, we will move on to the election of the officers for next year. Commissioner Peterson.
Can I may be out of turn. I think I may need to defer to Steve first on the nomination of officers, but I just wanted to quickly just thank you for the service that you've extended to the commission over this past year. To be chair is to require a thick skin, a deep reservoir of patience, and it helps to have a well-rounded sense of humor as well. And you have all three things in spades. And we've been colleagues for, you know, for 10 years now. We've been friends for much longer than that. And I know that being a chair is oftentimes a thankless responsibility. You've done it with a great deal of energy and concern about the interests of the people who work here and of the mission of the agency. And you've done an excellent job. And I just want to thank you for all of your efforts over the past year.
Appreciate it. Thank you. Do you have any motions for the new officers?
Is advice, Vice President, appropriate at this time?
Okay.
First of all, I'd like to just say to our outgoing chair how much it has been a pleasure working with you this year. This lady has always got something to say to add to the chemistry of our communications, and it's always enjoyable to have you, you know, lead us in some of those areas. And I did remember saying some time ago that it reminded you of a Columbo.
Oh, not again. Columbo again. Oh, no.
How you get things done in kind of this way where you kind of, next thing you know, you've agreed to it. And so the funny part was really, after I said that, of course, she was too young. So she asked her dad, says, what's a Columbo? He knew what Columbo was, so I think he went out and bought a bunch of those for you to
look at. I never watched them. Yeah. Well. They're in my house somewhere. Good show. I'll give them to you.
Well, yeah, would you do that? Sure, yeah, I'll take you up on that. In any event, it's been very nice. And
thank you.
Congratulations for a real nice year.
Thank you.
And then it's also my pleasure right now to nominate Matt for the vice chair position for this gang of four. And hopefully the number will change. But it's really an honor to do that. For some of those that don't know Matt and myself, and I always like to point out the fact that I think it is always nice when you have something in common outside of the agency. And when Matt and I both grew up with our grandparents basically running cattle and livestock along this mountain range on the border of Utah and Nevada. So over the many decades at that time, why our families were probably meeting each other on the top of a hilltop sometime, and it also gave us the ability to really appreciate in our own way the great place from which we came, which was these great mountain range, open, just wild still, no roads, no life other than natural life, big deserts below us. And so we always, you know, we talk about that, and I like to, this is an opportunity to reminisce because we have come in, you know, said that if we ever had a really tough issue, we could sit up there with around a campfire way up there and get it all figured out in our own Western way. But more than that, some background on Matt. He graduated from Brigham Young University with a degree in philosophy and studied Latin, magna cum laude, something I never had the pleasure to experience. And then he went on to law school at the University of Virginia and made law review, again, another area of absence in my end. Matt then went to work with Wiley Ryan for 3 years, and then he worked as counsel for the House Administration for another 3 years, and then he went to the Senate Committee on Rules and Administration for another 3 years, and that's where I met Matt even before I got on the commission, because I was there for a hearing based on my appointment, and I think I just met you on the door walking out after the hearing, and here we are. So one of the things I want to just say about Matt, we all say that he's a gentleman's gentleman. He's obviously always he's ready to talk about any tough subject, but it's always with a great amount of care and respect for the other person's point of view, and it makes communication on difficult subjects much easier. And I know whether you're a vice chair or otherwise, we always take the benefit of that. So. It's my honor to nominate you for vice chair, and I know you'll do great in this new position for the upcoming calendar year.
Thank you. I second the nomination. Do you third it?
Sure.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Congratulations. Very exciting. Commissioner, or should I call you Mr. Vice Chair?
Or vice chair designate,
vice
whatever
chair
you want
designate.
To say.
Almost vice chair.
No, I'll be happy to just enjoy these last few weeks of not having that heavy mantle on my head, and then we'll assume that in the early part of 2019. But I have a further motion I'd like to make. I'd like to move to nominate the vice chair, Ellen Weintraub, to serve as commission chair in the year 2019. Serving as FEC chair is nothing new for the vice chair. Within days of being confirmed, when she was originally confirmed by the Senate, she didn't have the opportunity to just kind of ease in and slowly learn the ways of the FEC. She, within days, was nominated and confirmed to be the chair of the FEC. So right from the outset of her tenure here, she had to dive into the deep end of the pool, and she has served capably since that time, and she no doubt will provide excellent leadership during the upcoming year. Vice Chair Weintraub has a very long and distinguished legal career that involves stints at the law firm of Perkins Coie, where she was a member of its political law group. Prior to that, she was a counsel to the Ethics Committee for the U.S. House of Representatives. She received her bachelor's degree from Yale College and her law degree from Harvard. And more importantly, she and her husband are the parents of three wonderful children whose achievements and service-minded pursuits have made them justifiably proud, and they are the subjects of many discussions that we have, and I'm always interested and excited to hear about the latest adventures that they're undertaking. I've been a colleague of the vice chairs for quite some time now. However, this will be the first time that we've ever been paired up in a leadership capacity, and I'm very much looking forward to working with you in the upcoming year to make it as productive a year as possible. And like I said, I've always appreciated her friendship. We've had an opportunity to teach together at many FEC educational conferences. That's always been a highlight for me, and I've always enjoyed not only teaching but also the opportunities we have to get together as staff to go have dinners together and to interact socially with one another, and I look forward to more of that in the upcoming year. So again, I am honored to make the motion to nominate Vice Chair Weintraub to be the chair in 2019, and at the appropriate time, I'll be happy to extend my vote in support.
Thank you, Commissioner Peterson. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. I think you have to vote first.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you have to vote.
It's not very modest, but okay. In order to have four votes, I vote aye.
Just to make sure. Congratulations, Madam Vice Chair and Chair Designate. Would you like to say a few words?
I want to thank my colleagues for their confidence in me. Being chair is really more of an administrative function. You get the joy of trying to find meeting dates, which is always a bit of a challenge, and running the meetings and trying to keep the trains running on time. And I want to thank the current chair for her steady hand on the gavel. She does run a good meeting. She is my my father always told me that if you want to get something done in life, the key trait that you needed was persistence, and that is certainly something that our current chair has. There were many times where I thought I told her no, and nevertheless she persisted in coming back at me again. I learned more in the last 15 minutes than in the last month about your evolving views on the internet disclaimer rulemaking, but I'm not letting that one go. So I'm looking forward to further discussions on that topic. And I'm very much looking forward to working with Commissioner Peterson, soon to be Vice Chair Peterson. It's interesting. It's a small group, and we keep swapping roles. It's funny the way the two of us have never been paired up together. So I'm looking forward to that. I very much like Commissioner Peterson and his staff, and I'm looking forward to that. And I also want to thank Chair Hunter's staff for all of their efforts this year. I hope that my staff will do as well next year. And looking forward to how I want to wish everybody very happy holidays. Hope you all get some time off to spend with your families and your loved ones. And really looking forward to seeing you all back here in January.
I agree. Happy holidays and Merry Christmas and all the rest of it. And thank you again to everybody. Commissioner Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to make hopefully one small request of the soon-to-be Chair Weintraub. One thing that she is always very good about is when you travel, you always bring back great sweets, you know, especially the chocolate. And so I'm hoping that that trend will continue in 2019, especially at our Chair Vice Chair meetings.
Well, if you stop by my office later, there is chocolate there.
Okay.
Mr. Palmer, are there any management or administrative matters that we should discuss?
Madam Chair, there are no such matters.
Thank you. This meeting is adjourned.